So today I'll be presenting my work on evaluating the effectiveness of model-based power characterization. This is a collaborative work with a lot of people from UC San Diego and Intel Research, including John McCullough, who's a PhD student, Satya Kupuswamy, who's a master's student, Alex Noren and Rajesh, who are faculty, and Jaydeep Chandrasekhar, who's our collaborator from Intel Labs. Basically, I'll be trying to convince you that the future for model-based characterization is not necessarily very rosy. So let me start off with some motivation. So computing platforms, as we all know, are ubiquitous, and they range from sensors, mobile devices, all the way to PCs and data centers. And they're also one of the largest consumers of energy, and they're actually slated to grow significantly. And in fact, some influential reports have put that these will be one of the largest rises in terms of energy consumption and carbon footprint. As a result, managing the energy consumption for these platforms is actually very important. For the battery-powered devices, the goal is, of course, you know, trying to get this goal of all-day or perhaps even all-week computing. But for mains-powered devices such as PCs and servers, it's all about trying to reduce the energy costs and, in effect, reduce their carbon footprint. Now, in order to manage energy consumption, as Amdahl's law tells us, you need to know what is the most power-consuming component so you know what to optimize. Similarly, for energy, you actually need to know, and you need a lot more visibility into where the energy is being consumed, also to understand whether whatever energy management algorithm you're running are actually, in effect, saving energy. Now, in order to know what is the right granularity, it could be both at the level of measuring total system power, or it could be at the level of trying to characterize the power consumption at an individual subsystem level, as in what is your radio taking, what is your screen taking, or what is your processor taking. Now, of course, the granularity depends on the level of optimizations you're trying to do. So if you're trying to optimize for radios, you want to know what, you know, the individual radios are taking. So the defining question from the software stack perspective really is, you know, how can power consumption be characterized effectively? And what are the limits in terms of accuracy of characterization, granularity, as well as complexity in trying to get these values in the first place? Now, power characterization is not a new problem. It has been well studied, and lots of people have done work on it. But the talk today is really about saying that, you know, we really need to revisit this thing, given the characteristics of modern platforms, which are very different from platforms that we saw a few years ago. So modern systems have significant large dynamic ranges compared to previous platforms. So if you looked at a platform circa maybe 2006 or 2007, you saw that they had a very large base power component. And as you scaled utilization from 0 to 100% for the power for the system, you saw that the power consumption, you know, the dynamic power component was a lot smaller than the static power component was. And as a result, it wasn't really essential to try to capture this dynamic power component if you want to do detailed power characterization. In effect, you could just say power consumption was some base, large base factor and some small dynamic factor, which could even be just guessed randomly. If you look at modern platforms, this has changed quite significantly, where the static power or the fixed base component of these platforms has become much smaller. It's still not quite zero when you're at zero utilization, but there is a much larger dynamic power component. And as a result, capturing this dynamic power component is critical if you want to actually be able to model characterize power effectively. Now, if you're doing power characterization, there are two basic ways to do that. You could measure everything. So the left is the Frankenstein board with lots of power sensors and wires, et cetera. And you can get like almost an arbitrary amount of accuracy. You can get 0.01% accuracy because you're measuring on the platform directly. On the right side is a very nice way of doing characterization, which is model-based, where the basic idea is that you have some counters, software counters, performance counters for the CPU, and you use those. You do that on a training set of data, and then you build up some fancy math, build a mathematical model for the power consumption, and then in a real platform, you don't actually need this instrumentation anymore, and all you need to do is measure the performance counters for your particular application, and you can model and predict power. Now, of course, modeling has this very nice feature that, you don't need detailed power measurements on every platform, and, you know, seems preferred. And there are many different models that have been explored, linear regression being the most common, learning, stochastic, et cetera. In this talk, we want to answer the basic question of how good are these models, given these modern platforms that I just described in the previous slide. And we want to see whether these models apply both for component level as well as system level power predictions going forward. So just to present a rough outline of my talk today, I'll first talk about the power measurement infrastructure that we've used to actually get this fine-grained characterization. You require a platform to actually even validate these power models, and I'll describe what we have. And it allows a fine-grained per-component breakdown at a very nice level. Then I'll present different power models, and I'll even talk about the prior work in this space, which is a lot of it is based on linear regression, and illustrate what the level of accuracy that they've talked about. And then I'll present some more complex models. I will compare these models with real measurements from our power measurement infrastructure that I'll describe for modern workloads, not just single-threaded CPU, spec CPU type workloads, but more workloads that are more representative of modern workloads. And then finally, I will show you that power modeling is actually subject to very high error, and the reasons range from increasing hardware complexity, hidden system states that you cannot quite observe, and it will only get worse with this feature that I'll introduce called hardware variability. So this is what our power measurement infrastructure looks like. We have a special platform called the Intel Calpella. It is highly instrumented, which has 50 sense resistors all over the entire board, so we can characterize power at a very fine granularity. We take all those measurements and connect them to two high input DACs, so these 32 channels each, 16-bit, 1.25 mega samples, so we can characterize power at a very fine granularity. And then let me just now talk about the prior work in this space, given that we have this detailed characterization and we'll try to compare we'll try to evaluate these power models. So in terms of total system power modeling, Economou and Rivieri both proposed regression-based models, and actually the Rivieri work is a follow-on to the first paper, where they use this framework called Mantis, and they show that for modeling an AMD Blade system or an Itanium server, so these are a couple of generations old, the modeling errors are actually less than 10% for the Blade and about 21% for the Itanium server. And then the second paper actually compares different regression models used more modern hardware, including a Core 2 Duo class Xeon, Itanium, file server, an AMD Turon laptop, and they show that the mean error is really less than 10% across spec CPU benchmarks. In terms of the subsystem power modeling, Bercher et al. Did again propose linear regression models on a P4 Xeon class system, so this is actually quite old too, and they showed that the error, modeling error is less than 9% across all subsystems. Now the part that comes out of this prior work is really all of these looked at single-threaded workloads, and they looked at systems with high base power, and of course systems that were a lot less complex. We're almost hitting like a billion transistors on modern systems, so they're a lot more complex than before. So let me first, before I delve down deep into the models that we have looked at, just briefly describe what a normal power modeling methodology will look like. So you would first, in order to build the model, you collect performance counters, OS, CPU, et cetera. You combine that with real power measurements on a very highly instrumented platform. You use this on a training set of data, and then you collect all these counters, and you use that to build some power models. And I use that as a black box. Basically, you could build different types of power models. Once you have a power model, you again do not do any of the measurements. You only connect the performance counters, OS, CPU, et cetera, and you do that for a testing set, because these are the testing set of applications that you want to now predict power for, and voila, you have a power prediction at the end. Now, if you compare the power prediction with the actual measurement, should you still have the same platform, you can basically figure out how much the error is in terms of your power modeling. Now, in terms of counters, you could have a myriad of counters, both from the CPU as well as the operating system. For our methodology, we actually we want to collect as most counters as possible. However, modern CPUs have limitations in the terms of the number of counters you can actually collect simultaneously, and it depends upon the processor that you have, but basically we can cover 4 plus 2 counters for the CPU. And of course, since I said that there's lots and lots of counters, the way we build the models is that we actually try to remove uncorrelated counters and you add them based on the coefficient. So you add the counters that are the most correlated. So this is the general form of power modeling. Now there is this set that depending on what you train the power model on and what you test it on might sort of have a tendency on how good your power modeling is. So in order to remove any bias in terms of what we choose in the training set and what we choose in the testing set, we take all our applications and we do this thing called K-cross-2 cross-validation, but we divide all the samples into two halves, and we use first half to train the models, and then we test on the second half, and then we randomly permute all the samples again, and we divide it again into half, and then use the first half to train and test, and then we do this 10 times. So basically, we remove any bias in terms of the training and the testing set. You're basically training on the testing set, so you should be, the error should be low, and this is really the best case. So the various power consumption models that we look like, first, we look at the Mantis power model. This is from prior work, as I mentioned, from Rivieri and Economou, and they basically use domain knowledge for counter selection. So they don't do any automatic method of selecting these OS and the CPU counters, but they use linear regression to actually build these models themselves. The next technique, the next model that we look at is called linear lasso, where instead of using this domain knowledge, which may not scale given we have, you know, newer CPUs come in, you may have different counters that may not be correlated, we use something called lasso regression, which is well known in terms of trying to find the most correlated set of counters, and you're trying to make the model sparse. So you're trying to find the least set of counters that give you the best correlation, and that's called linear lasso. Now, of course, there's a chance that perhaps the power that you're modeling or the subsystem that you're trying to model is not linear in general, so a linear model may not work. So we experiment with nonlinear models both by adding a polynomial term as well as the polynomial plus exponential term, which are the next two models that we'll discover. And then finally, we also use support vector machines to find if we can find even more complex models and whether they do better. And the difference with SVM is it does not actually force the model to be sparse, so you try to add as many counters as possible if in the hope that they would actually give you a better power model. We've chosen the benchmarks for our evaluation across a wide spec. So we've taken the normal spec CPU benchmarks. These are basically examples of single-threaded workloads that are very CPU-centric, and this is what prior literature has also used. We felt that this wasn't quite enough because, you know, we have multi-threaded workloads and we want to figure out things that are more representative of current generation things that people do. And we chose Parsec, which is based out of Princeton, which includes a variety of multi-threaded workloads, including file deduplication. And then finally, we added specific workloads that were designed to stress particular subsystems. Bonnie is an IO heavy benchmark. Linux build basically combines a lot of computation as well as IO, because it tries to do a parallel Linux build. And then finally, we have stress test apps, CPU load, and memcached, which you can actually vary in terms of the amount of effort that they actually do. So we use all of these benchmarks, and we try to evaluate the power models across them. So first, let me show you the results for our Kalpala platform and the power breakdown. So this chart basically shows what each of the components are contributing in terms of the total power. The white bar at the bottom, the constant 15 watts, is really because of the discrete GPU that we have. And we had to use it, but none of the benchmarks actually use it, so you can technically factor it out. But if you look otherwise, you see for these sample set of benchmarks, the system is really very, very dynamic. So for sleep, the power consumption is pretty low. It's about 25 watts, versus for swap options and stream cluster, the power consumption almost goes up to 55 watts. And by the way, Kalpala, this is the laptop class Nehalem system. So what you see from this graph is actually the benchmarks that we've chosen are actually exercising the different parts of the system so that we have a very large dynamic range. Now, let me first show you the results for modeling total system power. The graph on the left shows the case when we only use one core out of the multi-core system. So this is sort of what you would see for the prior work, which also wasn't meant for multi-core systems. And then the graph on the right is when you use all available cores for the system for running the benchmarks. And this is the metric that we use here is called mean relative error, which is the error across all the testing applications. And then each of the model techniques, linear lasso, Mantis, which is from the prior work, and then nonlinear polynomial lasso, all the way to support vector machines are shown. The error bars basically show the min max. So you see the mean relative error, and then the minimum is for one particular application that showed the minimum modeling error, and then the max shows one of the applications that might have that high a modeling error. So what you see here from this graph is if you're trying to model total system power, remember, this is what a lot of the prior work did. The as you go from a single core scenario to multi-core scenario, your errors start to increase significantly. And then you go almost to about 6 to 8% error from modeling the multi-core scenario. And for certain benchmarks, the error goes up to almost 15%. And we have, and the paper has a graph with all the applications and show the distribution based on a per application basis. Now this seems reasonable. You know, the error is not too high, it's still within 8%, but let's see what happens when we try to model a per component, like for example, if you're trying to model the CPU. Now, if you, again, the graph on the left is showing the single core modeling error versus the graph on the right is showing the multi-core scenario where we're using all the cores for running the benchmarks. And we see that the error rises from about less than 10% on the single core case to almost 20% on an average across all the benchmarks, with the worst case error being 150% for certain applications. Now this is quite bad, right? And I want to point out that this is actually the simplest case. We were trying to make this system such that, you know, it favored modeling as best as possible. So we disabled hyperthreading, we disabled turbo boost, we fixed the P state so the processor wasn't doing any voltage frequency scaling, and the errors are still quite high, even in the simplest case. If you try to break this down into, on a per application basis, you basically see that CMP inherently increases modeling complexity. And the important part to take away from the graph, again, a single core versus the multi-core, is that no specific modeling technique does better. So it's not like linear lasso always works better or SVM always works better. So it's not easy to pick a particular technique that will do best. Now, the natural question to ask is, so what happened between previous generation platforms and current and platforms going forward? Why has power modeling become so challenging? Why are we seeing such high errors? And the reason for this are severalfold. First, modern systems exhibit a lot of hidden system states. These are states that are just not exposed, either because the manufacturers don't want to use to show them because they form part of their competitive advantage. So SSDs, for example, do a lot of wear leveling, trim, delayed writes, and there are no counters to actually explore this, right? And you can't see this. In processors, they can do a lot of aggressive clock gating. Turbo boost is another functionality that they're using where they try to turn off all the available cores and can, for a very fine time granularity, raise the frequency of one particular core. Now, all of these aren't actually visible. Systems are also becoming extremely complex, right? The processor of now versus the processor a few years ago are miles apart in terms of complexity, and there are sometimes just way too many states. Like Nehalem CPU has hundreds of counters, most of them are not even correlated with power. And there are so many interactions that are just hard to capture. It's not like because they didn't put a software observable state because they didn't want to. It's like sometimes the contention and like the interaction of different applications with each other is just very hard to capture in a counter. So to see what might happen because of this hidden system space and complexity, I want to show an example where we tried to model the disk drive power, and the graph on the left is showing the case when we're trying to model the standard spinning platter type hard drive versus the graph on the right is for an SSD. And the assumption is that SSDs are the ones that have a lot of these hidden system states and complexity because of these complex algorithms that they run. And you find out for the same application, the same models, the power prediction error for SSDs is almost twice as higher, even though the absolute power for both these drives is less than 4 watts. So we're looking at the prediction error is really increasing, it sounds like, from the complexity in hidden system states. Now let me make the problem even worse, right? So the normal assumption that almost the community also had is that, you know, if you have a part that has been the same, so you have this shows four different dies for the Nehalem processor, and P1, P2, P3, P4, and you assume that P1, P2, P3, P4 have, you know, they're binned for 2.4 gigahertz, so they probably have the power consumption that is also very similar. Turns out that is really not the case, and it's going to get a lot worse. So the variability in hardware is increasing significantly. Identical parts are really not identical in terms of power and performance. And this variability can be due to a myriad of factors, starting from manufacturing variability, environmental variability, and just aging. If you use the processor a lot or you use these components a lot, depending on how they've been used, you'll see different types of aging effects on these. So as a result, the whole assumption of modeling where you model on one platform And then you say, okay, I have this platform that I built the model on, and now it'll apply to all instances of that same platform will no longer apply because the underlying parts may have variability where the models will not work. So to find out what this, you know, what effect that might have, we experimentally measured the power consumption variability for two identical CPUs. These were CPUs that were built, binned identically, that had the same revisions, et cetera. And we used the Core i5-540Ms for this experiment. Same benchmark, just different configurations, as in running on the one processor, first core, second core, and then changing just the processor and keeping everything else constant on the board to see what the power consumption was for the same benchmark run multiple times when you move from one instance of the processor to the other. And the results were quite surprising, right? For this particular benchmark, and the graph shows the average power consumption with the standard deviation marked. So the variation when we did multiple runs on the same configuration was not significant. However, the power consumption difference between running the same benchmark on the first core of processor one versus the first core of processor two, and then doing it on the core two of those processors was 12% across these. And since then, we have a lot more results on more instances of the processor. And this is going to make modeling so much harder. So if you combine 12% variability, and this changes based on applications, with the 20% average modeling error, I'm not even talking about the worst case, you can basically get to about 34% error on the average if you just had these two processors, right? And the part variability is not going to increase. It is actually slated to increase significantly in the future just because the feature sizes are becoming so small. So at some point, it's just, your transistor is just atoms thick. So to summarize, what we've shown today is that power characterization using power modeling is becoming infeasible for complex modern platforms and will probably become a lot worse for future generation platforms. We've shown that total power in the single core case can be, the error in prediction can be between 1 to 5%, which rises to 10 to 15% in the multi-core case. And the per-component power models are even worse, where you see a 20 to 150% error for the CPU, and then for memory, hard disk, and SSDs, you similarly see pretty high errors. We've identified several reasons for this, right, which range from hidden system state that is not observable to added system complexity, which makes coming up with these counters that express this even harder. And then finally, I've shown that given the presence of hardware variability, which is only going to increase further, trying to build power models is almost not going to work. So what's the conclusion? What do we do in the end? We sincerely believe that given these results, we actually need low-cost instrumentation solutions for accurate power characterization in platforms as we go forward. I can now take your questions.
Hi, I'm Asar from Prebit. So your conclusion seems to be that we need to add more instrumentations into our routing system so we can gather more data. Have you talked to the vendors about doing something like that?
Yes, we have. So I presented this talk also at Intel. And the first reaction was, well, there has to be a very good cost benefit for this because it's not hard adding instrumentation. There has to be a good reason to add it. And he says, given these results, it looks like you might be able to find good reasons to say, going forward, we should add instrumentation. Manufacturers are trying to reduce their BOM no matter what. They don't want to add even $10 worth of more components. So our goal is that we're going to show these results to some of these board manufacturers and say, look, we really need this.
And my second question is that you seem to be saying that there are a lot of variation between different systems and a single system. So it seems like we need to have data on a particular system and running a particular workload to help with making that work more power efficient.
Actually, it's more than that. I think that we will need instrumentation on all platforms. Like, the point is that building an instrumentation for one platform, and when you build the power model, and then given hardware variability, if you have another instance of the same platform, the power model may not work, and you're going to have a very high error. And the goal of this work really was to show that, a lot of the community, as well as a lot of efforts into power management, have relied on this presence of an accurate power model. Like, almost everybody thinks that, the power model is a given, right? And what we're trying to show is that given modern platforms, you can no longer take that to be the case.
Thank you.
Hi, Etienne Lasserre from UNSW. Yeah. You briefly touched on the prediction error of a spinning platter versus an SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not just because the SSD has much higher dynamic range? Because with the spinning platter, you've got the spinning disk, which is taking up most of the power consumption of the device.
So you're just saying that it has a lot more moving components, that's why? You're saying the dynamic range is higher, hence the error is higher.
The dynamic range on the SSD is much higher than that on the spinning platter, therefore the error should be higher.
That's true. In our case, we looked at the absolute power of these two things. We have a laptop class hard drive and then SSD, and the power consumption was between 2 to 3 watts for both of them. But you're right, but one of them is constantly spinning versus the other one has more, like in sleep an SSD takes about half a watt or less,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So that is the case, but that may be the case for the higher error, but the point also of that experiment was to show that, you know, this added complexity and the system state that you can't quite see is potentially also causing a lot of the cause of the higher errors, because the same counters are available for both the hard drive and the SSD with no additional counters.
But you can't conclude that that's because of the hidden state in the SSD.
Well, there's a state that we know that the SSD manufacturers are doing, which we don't actually see. So that was more of what we thought that could be an example of it.
Yeah. Did you look at variability with SSDs?
We have a, like, I point you to just variability.org has a lot of papers in this, and Steve Swanson, and he's another PI on the group, has a lot of data on variability in SSDs at the chip level, not just the SSD level,
okay.
And it's actually significant based on even where you write on the block. So, depending on if you write on the first blocks and the end blocks, there is a lot of variation in terms of reliability and power, et cetera. So you can take a look at that. Thanks.
Aman Kansal, Microsoft Research. So you showed that modeling doesn't work and hence we need instrumentation. But there are cases where I would think that modeling is really needed, where instrumentation just cannot measure things. For instance, if I have two applications running on the server and I want to know the energy use of each one separately, there's no real wire where I can put a resistor or a power meter that would let me measure that, right? So I need to improve modeling.
No, absolutely. I think the point is that a lot of applications assume it, including your own paper yesterday, right? That was showing that, you know, based on a power model, I can differentiate between one virtual machine and the other. But we're saying that power modeling has to improve, but given a lot of these factors that we've shown, that the errors will be quite high. So for an application thing, of course, that's a question of energy apportionment, right? It's like once I have the power model for the devices, now how do I assign energy from an application one to application two? And for that, there's a lot of work, including, you know, your own and including Quanto. Lots of different work is that, but that's sort of an orthogonal problem, right? I'm saying that in order to build proper power models, which you can then use to apportion energy, you need to really reconsider power modeling itself.
Except that some of those techniques do use modeling methods that are more advanced than what you compared, and they get lower error because of those more advanced methods, such as profiling the application behavior, which lets you leave the power states of the processor hidden, but you can still model that this application uses them in a particular way, and hence you can still get the error much lower than what you would if you were to just look at the performance counters.
You know, I'm sure we haven't evaluated all the different power models, but the fact is that if you look at even the, you know, let's look at variability at the end, right? Whatever you build, in the end, if your part-to-part variability is a lot much, then how will those power models even work when you have a different platform with a lot of hardware variability? I mean, that is going to make the problem a lot worse. And we're not talking about 5%, 10%. It could be 30, 40% variability. So how will any power model that has no notion of hardware variability ever succeed?
You can model that using a full system power meter too, right? You don't need per component meters to model that because your model can adapt using the total power measurement.
So I think in the end it depends upon the application, what you're trying to do. So if all you care about total power and whether you're incorrectly annotating it to the different subsystems, then perhaps it's fine. But if you actually have an application for which you're trying to optimize a specific subsystem, then you need accurate power models for that subsystem. It's not enough to say my power of the total system is 100 watts, but I could be annotating it completely incorrectly for whether it's the CPU that's taking the power or whether it's the disk that's taking the power. But we'll all still add up to 100 watts, you know? So it just depends upon the application.
True.
Yes, thank all the speakers for the wonderful talks. Another round of applause.